Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, folks, we got a lot of ground to cover today. We've got lots of motorsports, Formula One going on in Europe. We have Indy cars from Wisconsin last weekend. We're going to talk about a big race in Atlanta last night with NASCAR. Stories of ships sinking with cars in them. Issues with Tesla. And, of course, we've got a brand new Formula One movie that just came out this week. We'll certainly talk about what's going on with gas prices. And, of course, it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, our first article today is from the pages of Old Car Magazine. And the headline says, R.E. Olds, Automotive Royalty. Well, when Ransom Eli Olds turned his back on the initial Oldsmobile operation and struck out on his own in the American car industry, his friends expected grand results, while his competitors had to wince over the prospect. Still, the industry emerging with advances from year to year to feed the growing demand of personalized transportation only the automobile could provide. In other words, there was plenty of business for the car makers. So they sprang up across America, and they were driven by automotive industrialists and speculators, others by the grit and determination, others by the wish that, you know, they could just make a positive mark on society while financially feathering their own nests. It isn't easy to measure Mr. Olds to determine which of these he was, some, all, none. Suffice, he was his own man in many ways and was revered by many of the stalwarts and pioneers of the automotive business. Taking his initials REO as the name for his new brand that launched in 1905, he probably had no long-term dreams of the cars of these vehicles, later moving into trucks. Bearing the REO name would last until 1975, and in 1905, with more than half ownership in the new operation in Lansing, Michigan, Mr. Olds literally tried to outdo himself and the likes of Oldsmobile, his first motorized offspring. Well, it hardly took much time before competitors were wincing to realize that the REO operation was one of the four most financially blessed companies of its type in the United States by 1907, with gross sales not far below $5 million. Then came 1908, which bit the REO success story. That was blamed on a degree by the advances of the fledgling General Motors operation, along with the growing sales mania circling the Ford Model T. There was also a rash of newcomers practically year after year until the mid-20s. Time would tell their courses, but many of them leading to dashed dreams, which would have to admit that Mr. Olds probably knew this would happen, being the sage industrialist that he was. His dream was not to be dashed, at least not in his lifetime. There are various creative efforts to put behind the REO brand, which sometimes appeared in factory literature as REO in all capital letters. Other times it was a capital R and a little E and a little O. You take your pick to avoid any arguments on what actually happened. But there were the mid-priced REOs, and those would nudge toward the lower-priced categories, with the two-year Wolverine models in the late 20s were examples of this experiment with a less expensive car. Then, by 1931, REO officials nearly knocked their socks off the competitors with a high-priced model titled the REO Royal 8. This model bespoke of the future, sleeker bodies, aerodynamic fender lines. It was a fine car in many ways, though, through 1933. Afterwards, the REO bigwigs pushed for the Royals to have six bangers in them. You know, fine motor itself, but not quite the glitz and polish and performance of the eight-cylinder engines. Seldom far from Mr. Olds' mind after he launched REO, and it would be the trucks that would continue with the company's brand name into the 40s and beyond. Being flexible and fighting financial downers of the financially depressed 1930s, REO officials by 1935 tried to augment the initial Royal glory into a smaller, less powerful line. There were some comparisons would remain and through the 30s. The 1935 Royal ran with a six-cylinder delivering 95 horsepower. It had an aluminum head, which was great for heat dispensation. The body was nestled on a 118-inch wheelbase, and it was far smaller than the earlier wheelbases of 131 to up to 152 inches. Overall, the 1935 Royals were commendable, but they offered good motoring at a price that seemed to be good by pre-Depression days. But by the late 40s, retired Mr. Olds probably pondered the advancements made into his initial energy into the automotive field. He had turned the company over to the business management to a young breed of businessmen such as Richard Scott, who took the helm in 1915, and Olds held the post of the chairman of the board into the early 1920s. Even so, the investment of money, time, and effort and sweat continued to pay off, not only for the likes of the glory for the old man himself, but also for the each owner of the car and truck that bared his name. While REO name was retired from production in the 1970s, and the Oldsmobile moniker faded into the oblivion in the early 21st centuries, collectors seem to be holding to the virtuous success of these stories in memory and surviving pieces throughout the history of rolling proudly along with Oldsmobile and REO. Mr. Olds, that would make him smile if he knew the fact that these cars were still running. Website The Drive, the headline reads, Judge says feds can't withhold money from the states regarding the EV charger program. Well, when the Trump administration vowed earlier this year to claw back funds that had previously been awarded for the construction of new electric vehicle charging infrastructure, a California representative slammed the move as unconstitutional. On Tuesday, a U.S. District Court judge in Washington State stopped short of agreeing, but found merit in the plaintiff's arguments in a suit filed by California and 15 other states, including the District of Columbia, that the administration acted illegally. Judge Tanya Lynn said it was likely that the states would ultimately win, giving the administration a week or so to open its coffers, or most likely appeal the ruling, which has been destined for the Supreme Court. Now, 16 states who sued the administration, claiming that the administration's move to cut funds would result in immediate and financial harm, citing the money had already been spent on their contributions to infrastructure projects, which they had received federal approval for. Now, Judge Tin carved out some exceptions for two of these, Minnesota and Vermont, in her ruling, along with District of Columbia, as they failed to demonstrate how they would be monetarily impacted by the administration's actions. Now, President Trump began targeting the Biden-era EV mandates almost immediately after taking office. His administration attempted to roll back the expansion of charging infrastructure, federal incentives for private EV purchases, and the federal government's expansion of its own electrified fleet. Judge Tin's ruling is the latest in a series of setbacks for the administration, which is facing both legal and legislative hurdles to this initiative. Now, during his first term, the Trump administration pushed back hard, not only to roll back federal emission standards, but to weaken the power of individual states to set their own limits on internal combustion engines. The administration's campaign against California and its coalition of blue-leaning CARB states seemed to be decisive at first, but of its earlier victories were ultimately for naught, as the Supreme Court ultimately sided with the states over the federal government. It's a battle that Trump has pledged to take up in its second term, but it's unclear what avenue the administration will be able to pursue that wasn't already previously explored. Anything setting a permanent framework would have to likely be approved by Congress, where the Republican margin is slim. Electric vehicles, the headline reads, Tesla fires its VP of U.S. and European sales after just 9 months. Olamide Asfar was the head of U.S. and European manufacturing and sales and has left the company, according to multiple outlets reported on Thursday. While no one from Tesla has yet publicly commented on the separation, according to Forbes, the longtime executive and longtime friend of Elon Musk's, was a confidant, was fired outright. Now, he was promoted to vice president in October of 2024 and was tasked with overseeing the company's European and American sales and manufacturing operations amidst a steady drop-off in deliveries. A trend continued through the end of 2024 and into 2025. As America's biggest EV manufacturer, Tesla's slump has dragged down the overall EV sales, even as some buyers look to mainstream automakers for alternatives. Maybe it's down to political fallout, or maybe it's just the economy. But either way, he was unable to right the ship. And according to posts on Musk's X platform suggests that he and the CEO had a particular close relationship. He has not yet posted about his alleged termination. Now, Musk has allegedly stepped back into a more active role at Tesla since parting ways with the Trump administration and his position at the Department of Government Efficiency. With confidence in Musk's leadership in question at the company, this move is intended to signal that nobody's job is safe, even Musk's closest friends. Well, NASCAR news. Last weekend, they were in Pocono, and Chase Briscoe won the race after an issue that he had after leaving his pit box too early and not getting fully fueled. He was able to conserve fuel and go on to win the race, beating his teammate Denny Hamlin. Ryan Blaney finished in third, Chris Buescher in fourth, and rounding out the top five was Chase Elliott. And they are in Atlanta last night, and we'll talk about what happened there next. The pages of Racer.com, the headline reads, "An early big one takes out multiple Cup Series contenders at Atlanta." Well, the list of Cup contenders at Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta significantly decreased at the start of the second stage. Joey Logano described it as a super speedway wreck when 20 drivers, we're talking half the cars in the race, were involved in a crash on the backstretch. Logano, who was dominating in Stage 1, leading 51 of 60 laps from the pole, was one of the drivers involved. The incident was an accordion effect that, when the front of the field started to check up, other drivers just drove into the melee. Well, Joey Logano said, "It could have been a bad push. It's kind of hard to say. I was in the middle of everything. It's unfortunate because I think it got all our cars, and the Penske cars were so strong, so fast, and it's unfortunate when this happens, but it's part of the game. Sometimes you're the ball, and sometimes you're the bat, and today we were the ball." The group of cars such as Logano, Ross Chastain, Ryan Preece, William Byron, Daniel Suarez, Carson Hocevar, Kyle Larson, Chase Briscoe, Corey LaJoie, Denny Hamlin, Cody Ware, Brad Keselowski, Noah Gregson, Justin Haley, Austin Cindric, and Josh Berry were all involved in the crash. Well, according to Josh Berry, yeah, this got a lot of cars. I had no idea what was happening. It was looked like we were all just pushing hard for 8th to 10th, and then it just got squirrely. It's just disappointing being taken out of this event with so many laps left. Now, Cindric, who won the first stage of the race, said a lot of cars were wrecking in the middle of the straightaway, and that's what you kind of expect in the corners with a push gone wrong, Cindric said. But it's hard to say. I'd say there's a small chance I saw there was a gap I could get through, but obviously it didn't work out. It's a shame because we had a super fast car. So, crazy crash. I was watching the race last night and there was some rain delays, so I kind of jumped into the middle of what I thought was the middle of it, and it was just at the start of the second part of the race when the huge crash. My wife came out and said, "What the heck's going on?" I said, "Yeah, we got a big crash going on here." And after the big crash, the race continued, and the headline reads, "Elliott bumps drafts into a frenetic hometown victory at Atlanta." Well, timing his pass on the last lap to perfection, Georgia native Chase Elliott charged past Brad Keselowski and held off the driver of the number 6 Ford to win last night's running of the Quaker State 400 at Echo Park Speedway in Atlanta, Georgia. A popular victory for the first event of the NASCAR in-season challenge broke a 44-race drought for Elliott dating back to his last win at Texas Motor Speedway. The win was his second at this track for the driver of the number 9 Hendrick Chevrolet and the 20th of his career. The 29-year-old from Dawsonville, Georgia, advanced to the second round of the in-season tournament, eliminating his first-round opponent of Austin Dillon, who finished 20th. There were 46 lead changes among 13 drivers, and Elliott got a welcome push from his teammate, Alex Bowman, who actually helped him win the race. Give you a quick rundown of the top 10. Chase Elliott wins the race. Brad Keselowski in second. Alex Bowman in third. Tyler Reddick in fourth. Eric Jones in fifth. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. had a nice run in sixth. Zane Smith in seventh. Ty Dillon finished in eighth. Ninth was Chris Buescher. And rounding out the top 10 was Carson Hocevar. CNN.com, the headline reads, cargo ship carrying new vehicles to Mexico sinks in the North Pacific weeks after catching fire. Well, a cargo ship that had been delivering vehicles to Mexico in the Pacific Ocean weeks after a crew members abandoned the ship when they couldn't extinguish the onboard fire that left the car carrier dead in the water. Well, the Morning Midas sank Monday in international waters off of the Alaska Aleutian Islands chains, according to the ship's management company, Zodiac Maritime. Quote, there is no visible pollution, according to Petty Officer Cameron Snell, a Alaskan-based U.S. Coast Guard spokesperson. Right now, we have vessels on the scene to respond to any possible pollution. Now, the fire damage was compounded by bad weather and water seepage, causing the car carrier to sink in waters that were about 16,000 feet deep, almost 5,000 meters, about 500 miles from the land. The ship was loaded with about 3,000 new cars intended for a major Pacific port in Mexico. It's not clear if any of these cars were removed before the ship sank. The salvage crews arrived days after the fire disabled the vehicle. Two salvage tugs containing pollution control equipment will remain on scene to monitor for any signs of pollution or debris. And the crew members of the two ships were not injured during the sinking of the ship. Now, the Coast Guard received a distress call about a fire that was on this ship back in June the 3rd. There were 22 crew members on the Morning Midas. They were all evacuated to a lifeboat. Among the cars, about 70 fully electric cars and 680 hybrids. A large plume of smoke could be seen on the ship's stern. That's a part of the ship where the electric vehicles were loaded. The 600-foot Morning Midas was built in 2006 and sails under a Liberian flag. It had left China on May 26 en route to Mexico. That's a lot of cars that could be at the bottom of the ocean, and who knows potentially what kind of pollution issues that could cause. After running last weekend at one of my favorite racetracks in America called Road America in Wisconsin, a beautiful, beautiful park-like setting, super long track, over 4 miles long. And the headline reads, Pillow reasserts his IndyCar dominance at Road America. It was 96 degrees in the air and much, much hotter on the track at Road America as Alex Pillow won the Expel Grand Prix during an excessively aggressive afternoon of IndyCar racing in Wisconsin. By the end, the Spaniard's ability to make speed when it was needed and to sip fuel to close the race when needed. The timing of numerous cautions would mean he would be at risk of running out of fuel, but he mastered both demands and cruised to a 2-second victory in the number 10 Chip Ganassi Racing Honda over Meyer Shanks Racing's Felix Rosenquist and the number 60 Honda, and Santino Ferrucci completed the podium on the number 14 AJ Foyt Racing Chevrolet. It was crazy out there for us, who earned his 6th victory of 2025 and his 10th for Honda dating back to Nashville Speedway in 2024. At the start, we were losing tons of positions, and kudos to an amazing strategy by Honda for giving us amazing fuel mileage and power when we needed it to make it to the end. Pillow's performance took his championship lead, which had diminished to 73 points after two consecutive rough finishes, up to 93 points advantage over Kyle Kirkwood. Now, what was interesting for me in watching this race, Santino Ferrucci was so low on fuel, he decided that he was not going to try to drive around the 4-mile track and parked it right just past the finish line and turn one. Ferrucci, who had stopped in turn one, had fans throwing him bottles of water over the fence after a scorching afternoon of racing, but he wanted a beer, which he quickly emptied to the delight of the hearty Road America fans. And this was on national TV, and it made all the news as they threw him a beer over the fence, and he chugged it pretty darn quickly because it was super hot at that track. It was a very, very interesting race. I Really, really enjoyed watching it. And like I said, this is one of my favorite racetracks in the United States. So Alex Palou wins. Felix Rosenquist second. Santino Ferrucci in third. Kyle Kirkwood in fourth. And Marcus Armstrong rounding out the top five. As I mentioned earlier, Formula One is in Austria, and I'll have those results for you next weekend. And also, the new Formula One movie called F1, starring Brad Pitt, hit the theaters this week. My wife and I are looking forward to checking that movie out, and hopefully I'll have some more news and maybe even a review of my personal experience in watching that film by next week. Well, time for a little weird and unusual automotive news. And the headline reads, Big Rig Clips a Bucket Truck, Leaving a Worker Dangling for Dear Life. Well, a technician servicing a traffic light had a horrible day at work this week when a semi-truck whacked the bucket. He was suspended over an intersection, leaving him dangling upside down over the pavement. Someone's dash cam captured the scene perfectly. The worker was lucky enough to escape any major physical harm, but I doubt that they'll be excited to go back up in one of those buckets anytime soon. And the video clip is pretty dramatic. Now, the incident occurred in Denham Springs, Louisiana. That's a little town east of Baton Rouge, and the clip has been uploaded to YouTube and Facebook. Local ABC affiliate talked to the local police department and said the worker suffered only minor injuries and was not taken to the hospital because he had a harness on. I never thought about, well, those guys having a safety harness, but now after seeing this clip, boy, it certainly makes sense. Now, the investigation of whether any charges were filed are pending. The Louisiana Department of Transportation and Development has to get involved because the traffic light is operated by the state. It looks like a service crew is either from a local agency or a third party, though, because the markings on the work trucks do not look like Louisiana Department of Transportation. Quote, I don't know how the truck could have made that turn without hitting the pole on one side or without hitting the truck, according to East Baton Rouge Parish Director of Transportation. He said he shared with the outlet on these comments, anytime there is any work on the roadways, there is signage that is required or barricades that say that this lane will be closed. Apparently, lane closures are not always required in this situation. As far as I can tell, the big rig driver and the road crews share the blame for this one. Anyone driving anywhere should be aware of the space their vehicle occupies, especially for commercial drivers. The person running that big rig is responsible for the airspace at the top of the cab and the trailer and what they take up. That being said, putting a bucket truck over an open lane of traffic seems a little nuts to me. Why the heck would you not put out signs and cones to keep vehicles from driving underneath the person working on a harness? Well, I'm guessing that question will be brought up by the Louisiana Department of Transportation. We'll see what happens. At least one thing happened. That harness worked, so be careful out there because you can crash into things sometimes that you don't expect. We'll talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is down at $3.18. In Arizona, that's $3.25 a gallon, so we're just a little bit higher than national average. New Mexico, $2.96. Colorado, $3.12. Utah, $3.34. Nevada, $3.79. California, $4.59 a gallon. As you head east, oh, Texas, $2.76. And Oklahoma, $2.75 as average gas prices there. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, if you want the cheapest gas in the state, you need to head to Littlefield, Arizona for the TA Express for $2.54. The Costco in Prescott, $2.65. Arco Station in Prescott, $2.65. The Shell Station in Williams, Arizona at $2.77 a gallon. And Costco in Tucson at $2.79. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. All right, well, you can find some gas in the city under $3 a gallon. The Sam's Club on Gilbert Road, $2.89. The 76 Station at 67th Avenue and Bell Road is at $2.95. The Costco at 33rd Avenue in Phoenix at $2.95. and selected Costco's all over the city, just a little at $2.99, as well as Sam's Club. So good news, gas prices down a little bit, but we'll see what happens with next week with the 4th of July knocking on the door. Brian says gas prices remain stable for the 4th of July despite the Middle East tensions. Well, that's good news, as more than 61 million Americans plan to hit the road over the 4th of July holiday. And according to AAA, many of those are keeping a close eye on the prices of gasoline as tensions in the Middle East ramp up. Despite the recent strikes in Iran, experts say holiday travelers will not see a significant increase immediately at the pump. And that's good news, because traditionally, as I mentioned before, gas prices rise for these big holidays. But right now, it looks like we should be okay. Everybody keep their fingers crossed. Well, folks, we've reached that time. Time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I've got a four-cylinder 2007 Honda Accord with an over-torqued oil drain plug that I can't get out. The bolt is not rounded off, but the threads appear to be stripped as I cannot get the bolt out. While I turn the bolt, well, the threads don't grab. I've tried pulling back on the bolt with vice grips while trying to back it out. I've applied outward pressure on the bolt by wedging a screwdriver between it and the oil pan while I rotate the bolt counterclockwise. Neither of those things are working. Do I just need to take the oil pan off, or is there any way to get the bolt out without removing the oil pan? And that's from Josh. Well, I'll skip over the part of my answer where I chastise you for over-tightening the bolt and stripping it into place the first time, Josh. You're clearly suffering enough, and you're on the right track in terms of getting the plug out. But in my experience, this is really a two-person operation. While one person grabs the bolt with a pair of vice grips and pulls down, at the same time another person exerts outward pressure on the bolt by wedging a large flat screwdriver in there and twisting the screwdriver to help separate the plug from the pan itself. Now, you do have hope to get this thing out, but if you can get it out, then you can go out and buy yourself an oil plug repair kit. You'll also need a drill. Drill out a larger hole in the oil pan, and they'll give you be able to tap the new threads, and the new drain plug will come with this kit, and you'll screw it in with those threads. Now, if you manage to get the plug out, you can always go to a local repair shop and plead stupidity. In fact, you might just want to go straight to that step and skip the part about where you screwed up the repair to. If you came into our shop, we'd give you a little grief about over-tightening the plug, and then we'd do our best to help you out. It's easier when you put this car up on a lift and let a guy named Mongo hang from it with his vice grips. In fact, honestly, I just wave the white flag. Take it to the shop right now. They can do the handle and the repair. And if you need a new oil pan, well, they can help you with that as well. Yeah, sometimes those own personal repairs go a little sideways, don't they? Well, that's all the time we have for the car show, folks. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.